From Decatur to Dunwoody, from Tucker to Toco Hills, from Chamblee to Stone Mountain, this is the voice of commerce in DeKalb County. Now, broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Decatur, this is DeKalb Business Today.
And good morning. Welcome into another edition of DeKalb Business Today and DeKalb Business Radio. My name is Matt Holmes, excited to be joined by an all-star panel of guests, local business leaders from in and around DeKalb County. We're going to introduce them coming up in just a second, but first we want to remind you that DeKalb Business Radio is on social media. Follow us on Twitter at DeKalb Radio X and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/DeKalb Business Radio X. Now, as for that panel I mentioned, let's go ahead and introduce them. Our first guest is Victoria Collier. She's with the Elder and Disability Law Firm of Victoria Collier. We appreciate having you here this morning.
Thank you, Matt.
So talk to us a little bit about your background, some of the things that inspired you to get involved with seniors.
When I was younger, I moved out of my parents' house at 17, and I did a lot of odd jobs, but most of which was like Burger King and Subway sandwich shop. Not wanting to do that forever, I actually started working in a nursing home doing hands-on care for seniors, and I was in the hallway that people needed total care. And so that was my first love of seniors. I wasn't raised around my grandparents, and so these kind of became my pseudo grandparents, and it was lovely to be able to take care of them in a way that no one else could.
And you continue that on today. I know you're doing some great work for veterans. You're a veteran yourself. We'll look forward to talking a little bit more about that as well coming up. Our next guest is Hank Halter. He's the president and CEO of Delta Community Credit Union. Hank, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Matt. How are you today?
Doing well. So let's start with the basic question, because the people who listen, everybody from the CEOs all the way down to business novices, the question I'm sure that you guys have to answer a lot, the difference between a bank and a credit union.
Yeah, sure, Matt. There's some very significant similarities, but we're also very, very different than a bank. You know, we offer many similar products, checking, savings, Visa cards, mortgages, car loans, even member business lending. But where we're very different than a bank is we're not for profit. So every penny of profit that we generate, we return that back to our owners, and our owners is every one of our members. We don't have third-party investors like banks do. So when we generate $46 million of profit, for example, last year, we return that back to our members in the form of higher rates on deposits, lower rates on loans, and generally no fees or lower fees. But again, we're not for profit, we're member-owned, and we're insured just like a bank.
Delta Community Credit Union, a big name around the Metro Atlanta area, a big reason for that. You guys are awfully involved in the community. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a couple minutes.
Sure.
But let's get to our third guest, James Cobb. He is a partner, founder of Kaplan Cobb Law Firm. James, we appreciate having you here this morning.
Thank you, Matt. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your practice. What kind of cases do you handle?
Most of my cases involve disputes between businesses or between business owners, contract disputes, fiduciary litigation, fights over investments. That's probably 90% of the work that I do. And then we have what I think of as my bucket of fun cases. One of the reasons my partner and I founded this firm was to have the freedom to continue to provide the level of service we provided at our former firms, which were much larger business shops, but also to have the freedom to take cases that are just interesting, civil rights cases, cases that have a public interest component. So the other 10% of my cases fall into that category.
Very cool. We'll talk about how Kaplan Cobb got started and where y'all are headed in the future coming up in just a minute. Matt Holmes here on DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. Let's get back to our first guest, Victoria Collier. You can check out her website, elderlawgeorgia.com is the site. So tell us, what is estate planning? How is it a little bit different from elder care planning?
Everyone is familiar with estate planning, and essentially the question is, what do you want to do with your stuff when you die? The difference between that and elder care planning is that we ask a different question. What are we going to do if you keep living? And how do we focus on preservation of assets, leverage of those assets, and then accessing quality care? How are we going to pay for that care, whether we're at home, assisted living, or nursing home care? So with our planning, even though we use a lot of the same tools, we do powers of attorney for health care. We do powers of attorney for finances, wills, and trust. They're designed very differently for the event that we're going to live longer than expected, and we're going to need care versus just death planning.
What's the ideal age of a client that you're looking to reach out to? I would imagine if somebody's just really forward thinking and they're 50 years old and I want to make sure I'm set up for the future, that's a great situation. But I would imagine also you get 75-year-old, 80-year-old people who they're at that point. That has to be a little bit more difficult.
There's two types of planning. There's the pre-planning and then there's the crisis planning. The ideal age for pre-planning is, for our firm, is between 60 to 70, because that's when they're starting to consider their own care because they've just taken care of a parent.
Okay.
And they don't want to go through the same situation. For crisis planning, we're talking about someone usually in their 80s or above who are in a rehab facility and they don't know if they're coming home or if they're going in a nursing home.
Talk to us about when someone should stop using an estate planner and start looking at an elder care attorney.
When they notice a decline of either physical health or of cognitive health, memory issues, and it's at the beginning of the decline that they should really seek counsel from an elder care attorney, not when the crisis is occurring where it may be too late to implement a good plan.
A lot of people are just going to fall back and say, well, Medicaid's going to pay for it. I know that's not always the case.
Medicaid can only pay if you qualify both financial, you know, both income and asset-wise. And so there's a lot we can do to help people preserve their assets and still qualify for Medicaid. That's a large part of our business. But it would be our preference to help people actually leverage their resources and empower them to pay privately so that they can have more choices than to rely on the Medicaid system.
We live on a cul-de-sac, and basically all we have are elderly neighbors, people in their late 70s and 80s, and they're looking at this type of thing right now. They're healthy enough to be where they are and live on their own, but they're talking about, we'll have to sell off our house, we'll have to sell off our car. Is that always the case?
Not if they do good planning to begin with. And sometimes you do have to move if you want to continue your socialization, because that's a big part of our health, is not being isolated. But when we do decide to sell the house, we voluntarily decide that instead of it having to be mandatory based on not making any choices. Then we can make a great plan as to what to do with those funds instead of waste them and unnecessarily spend them down.
How are you different from some of your competitors? I know that you're part of lots of, you know, panels, boards, you've got lots of recognitions and everything, but how are you different when there are people out there that are looking for your services?
There's a few things that distinguish us. Number one, I come from a caregiver's perspective, having been caregiver hands-on in a nursing home. While I was in the Air Force, I also did home health care at nighttime. Being military, I am the national expert on veterans benefits. I teach lawyers nationwide, and being a veteran, that certainly helps with that connection and that passion. But I also employ a social worker full-time on my firm, in my firm, because so much of the questions have to do with care and how to obtain the care, and a social worker speaks the same language as the healthcare providers. And that's just an added bonus to my clients. We don't charge extra for that service.
Talk to me a little bit about how you're helping veterans. You mentioned that you're a veteran of the U.S. military. How are you giving back?
How we give back is twofold. And one is, first of all, I have written two books on veterans benefits. One's available on Amazon, which is called 47 Secret Veterans Benefits for Seniors. The other is just available through my office. But we educate them first and foremost as to what's possible, what are benefits they could get. And secondarily is that we will see veterans, and if they are not qualified for the benefits, we help them qualify and still maintain their resources. But if they are qualified, lawyers cannot charge to help them with an application, so many lawyers will not even accept that client. We will accept them, we will assist them with the application, and we'll assist them with filing it, and we do not charge for that.
These are two different groups. When you talk about seniors and you talk about veterans, who maybe are most in need in our society, and you're stepping up and helping them.
We do our best.
That's awesome. Check out her website, elderlawgeorgia.com. Victoria Collier from the Elder and Disability Law Firm of Victoria Collier. We appreciate you being here today.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, let's go to our second guest, Hank Halter, again, the president and CEO of Delta Community Credit Union. So, Hank, talk to me a little bit about your loan programs there.
Sure. We offer many loans, as I mentioned, Matt. You know, on the consumer side, auto loans, both new and used autos, consumer loans. We have a no-fee Visa Platinum credit card. We also have commercial lending. So for our members that are running businesses, we offer opportunities for them to borrow and invest in their businesses. Really a wide variety of loans. We're seeing extremely strong growth this year. Our direct lending will exceed 10% this year due to strong demand for Delta Communities products.
Now, you mentioned that this has the Delta name. It originated with Delta Airlines. Can anybody be a member of Delta Community Credit Union?
Yeah, Matt, the way it works is we're a community-based credit union. So as long as you live in one of the 11 Metro Atlanta counties that we're privileged to serve, you're able to join Delta Community Credit Union. You don't have to work for a specific employer. As long as you're living in one of those counties, we serve counties as north as Cherokee and Hall, down south to Henry and Fayette, for example. Certainly DeKalb is a very large county we serve. And in fact, our branch is just around the corner, 245 West Ponce. So again, living in one of those 11 Metro Atlanta counties is all you need to qualify.
Now, we've talked with other bank presidents and executives in the show here, and it can be a challenge for them. You know, when someone moves into the area, they need a new bank perhaps, and there's all kinds of different ways they can find a bank. I know that you all take great strides to be involved in the community.
Oh, yeah. And you know, look at our name, Delta Community Credit Union. Community is part of our name. We believe it's our corporate responsibility to invest in the community. When we invest in the community, and in fact, Delta Community, our employees, will invest nearly $625,000 this year in the communities we're privileged to serve. When we do that, it helps make the community stronger. It certainly benefits our members that live in the community, and that's what we're all about. We're here to serve our members, and if our members thrive, then Delta Community thrives.
What kinds of charities are you involved with? How do you pick out the charities? Because I would imagine, you know, if there are nonprofits out there that know that you guys are charitable, they're coming to you.
Oh, yeah, no, and we welcome that opportunity to consider the charities, and you're right, it's a very difficult decision of who to support and how we can support as many as possible. You know, we look to support charities that support our mission, which is enhancing financial and physical well-being. This year, as I mentioned, our employees in Delta Community will invest $625,000 in those. Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, for example, is one of them. The community school in Decatur, the Junior Achievement Habitat for Humanity. We're a member of the DeKalb Chamber, and in that also assists us in helping them assist the community. So many different ways our employees will give about 1,000 hours of volunteer service themselves to support the communities as well.
Talk to me a little bit about your background. I know that you've got a degree from Villanova. You've got a degree from Duke. You were, a CPA, I believe?
Sure.
With Delta Airlines, and now you're with Delta Community Credit Union. Talk about that path and how you ended up where you are.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I spent about 20 years in the airline business. My last position at Delta, I was the chief financial officer. But I've served on the board of Delta Community Credit Union for almost 10 years now, and in January of 2013, I became the chief executive officer. It's an honor to serve Delta Community, and it's really an honor to serve our members. We have 325,000 members at Delta Community. We're the largest credit union in Georgia, really by twofold. Our assets are $5 billion. But, you know, every day is an interesting challenge. The financial services industry is ever evolving. We're constantly focused on what products and services do our members need. Perhaps what products and services do we offer that are no longer of interest to them, and how can we best meet our members' needs? And it's always an ever-changing business, particularly in the e-commerce space.
When you took the job, I guess about 2.5 years ago, I'm sure you had some priorities, some initiatives that you wanted to get going there at Delta Community Credit Union. What were those?
Yeah, one of them was just simply, how does our product and service mix meet the needs of our members? The electronic space is something that we're investing in. You know, we recently invested in an overhaul of our online and mobile banking platform, making it easier for our members to bank with us. You know, years ago, our members would simply come into one of our 26 branches to do their transactions. Now, given the internet and the proliferation of e-commerce, many of our members, while they still want to use the branch when they care to do so, more importantly, they want that e-opportunity. So we recently invested significant dollars in online mobile banking, giving more tools and functionality to our members through the electronic channel, but we're very much focused on listening to what they want. Another is on the lending side. We now have a new lending platform to make it even easier for our members and employees to collect the loan data, the application, and get a decision to our member very, very quickly. You know, when you're out looking for a new car, you're focused on the car, the actual buying process, the financing process. That's you know, to some people a nuisance, but they recognize I need financing. We make it as easy as possible for that member. And similarly with home purchases, you know, you're focused on that property. You need to move quickly. Oftentimes, we want to be ready to serve you and get you to your decision quickly. And that's what we're investing in as well.
5, 10, 15 years down the road, what does banking look like? Do we still have those brick and mortar locations?
You know, Matt, I think the brick and mortar locations will exist, but what goes on in the brick and mortar location 10, 15 years from now is probably going to be very different than it is. And just think about it now, you know, when we were kids and we would go into those branches, you know, we had that passbook and, mm-hmm. you'd see your deposit in there and you were proud and you'd see the balance. They don't exist anymore. People are going into those branches now for different reasons, but no, I think there will absolutely be a need for those brick and mortar buildings, but you'll see continued proliferation of the online opportunities.
Hank Halter, the president and CEO at Delta Community Credit Union. Follow them on Twitter at Delta Community. You can like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Delta Community. And, of course, check out the website, deltacommunitycu.com. Hank, we appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
All right, so the third guest on our panel, James Cobb, partner and founder at Kaplan Cobb. They're on Twitter at Kaplan Cobb. So tell me a little bit about your practice, James.
My practice is mostly business litigation. The clients that I represent tend to be business owners, businesses themselves, or directors or officers in a business who have gotten into some dispute that's a significant event in the life cycle of their company, whether it's a fight between partners who've decided that they want to separate, or it's a fight between contracting parties who have decided that their relationship is not being as productive as it otherwise should be. They'll bring us in to help resolve that fight. Most often, it involves some form of litigation or dispute resolution. I'm first and foremost a trial lawyer and an appellate lawyer. But we also help clients get out of these fights and avoid litigation, because litigation is extraordinarily expensive, and business cases in particular are even more expensive. The focus of our practice, one of the reasons we started this firm, was to bring a high level of client service, but in a lower overhead environment. There are a lot of lawyers who are very good, but who are out of the price reach for virtually everybody except for the largest publicly held companies. And those lawyers, for the most part, are practicing in very large firms. My partner and I came from firms like that, but decided that we could do a better job for our clients and charge less, have more fun, and spread the market a little more widely that we would be pitching to. Because before, at our former firms, we may have been out of reach for a lot of businesses with the fees we had to charge, the hourly rates we had to charge. But now I have the freedom to charge whatever I want, have a lower overhead environment, but we've got very good lawyers. We've got four lawyers in our firm, all of whom have spent time, a lot of time practicing in complex litigation environments, and who enjoy being able to provide that high level of service, hopefully to someone who may not have been able to afford us at our old firms.
So how are you different from some of your competitors?
I think it goes back to our flexibility. There are other firms like ours that are small, that staff cases leanly, you know, that don't put 10 or 15 lawyers on a case, might put two lawyers on a case. And there are other firms like ours that practice extensively in federal court, where the procedural rules are a little bit different, or in some of the state and superior courts dealing with business cases. But we are one of the few firms in town that exclusively do this type of high-end litigation, but with the low overhead model, and bring a lot of flexibility to our fee arrangements and, frankly, creativity to our fee arrangements. We like to be able to share risk with our clients, whether we are representing a plaintiff or a defendant. For example, we will use sometimes success-based fees where we'll get rewarded if we get a good result. And that can help the client know that if things don't go as well as we all hope they do, maybe their out-of-pocket expenses are not quite as high. But if things go very well, then all of us win. I think that's one major factor that differentiates us from much of the market.
Victoria is serving mostly people, individual clients. You're working mostly with businesses and business owners. So what types of cases, what types of issues are they having?
We're seeing a lot, as the economy ebbs and flows and things are starting to recover and get better, that causes, surprisingly, business breakups. We're seeing a lot of partnership disputes where people have decided that they have some new opportunity they want to pursue, but maybe they're tied up in a business or a partnership arrangement that they need to get out of. Hopefully, you can help those people extricate themselves without getting into litigation, but sometimes you can't. So we're dealing with a lot of business breakups, business divorces, as they're called. I think they're called that because although they're not divorces, they're about as emotional as a divorce. The other issues that we're seeing quite a bit are contract disputes between parties who've entered into some form of a joint venture and for whatever reason have not been able to come to terms and to continue operating cooperatively with each other. We try very hard to counsel our clients both legally and from a business perspective. My partner and I are both not only lawyers but business owners, and have had quite a few experiences running a small business. And a number of our clients have brought us on not only to advise with respect to litigation issues, but also to help them prospectively think about where their business is going, hopefully avoid issues in the future. You know, the nature of my business is that if I do a good job, I kill my client base.
Right.
People hire me when bad things happen. And then if I help them fix those bad things in the process, they hopefully will learn how to avoid another bad thing happening in the future. And so that's a natural consequence of the type of work that I do. But it's also, it presents an opportunity for me to show a client that, you know, I can bring value to their business by helping them think through prospectively, how do they manage risks and how do they manage their various contracting relationships? How do they manage their legal services budgets? Legal issues are, tend to overwhelm a business owner because it's not only foreign, but it's expensive. And you don't know how to control it because you have to rely on a lawyer, and you're retaining that lawyer in a market that's not entirely rational or transparent. So our clients also will look to us sometimes to help manage their legal services because we can bring some transparency to their other legal services providers. But the bottom line is we do a variety of different things for our clients.
So I'm going to ask you to kill your potential client base a little bit more, but some advice for business owners or businesses just starting up so that they never have to go to you with their business divorces.
It's all about planning, putting in place provisions. If, for example, you start a company and you decide to structure it as an LLC and you have an operating agreement, which is the document that governs the relationship between the partners or members of an LLC, putting provisions in there that will be triggered if somebody decides to exit the business. You know, we call them buy-sell provisions, provisions that govern the withdrawal of a member, provisions that govern the termination of a member if the other partners decide that that member is not performing up to expectations. Setting those out in advance so that everybody has an understanding at the beginning of what's going to happen if something unfortunate occurs in the business is very important. The other piece of advice that I would give as a lawyer to a business owner is surround yourself with competent advisors whom you trust, and to the greatest extent possible, compartmentalize your focus on legal issues because they have a tendency to overwhelm a business owner. It's to the business owner's benefit to set aside some time, whether it's weekly or monthly, depending on the number of legal issues that they're facing, where they know every Monday at 9 o'clock, I'm going to talk to my lawyer and we're going to run through some issues, and then I'm not going to think about it for the rest of the week. Because legal issues are stressful for businesses to face. Nobody likes to deal with them except for lawyers. And compartmentalizing them like that in your day-to-day operation of your business can be helpful to relieve some of the stress and let the business owners focus on what they're good at, which is running the business.
How did you and your partner find that person to trust, that third party that you can get advice from?
We don't have one. It's that I offer that advice, but we have each other.
Okay.
My partner and I were at other firms in Atlanta, very, very good firms that are often on the opposite sides of a case. And his clients kept suing my clients. So we had one particularly contentious piece of litigation that went on for a couple of years in which we got to know each other very well. That matter settled. And at the end of that case, he and I started talking about combining forces. My partner is one of, if not the smartest people I've ever met. He's a great business mind in addition to a great legal mind. And we're able to rely on each other for looking, for helping to think through those issues. We also have a partnership agreement, for example, that governs what happens in the course of our business, but also if we decide that the business is not working. Thankfully, it's working very well, so we haven't even come close to that point. The piece of advice that I did take advantage of is the first one, surrounding yourself with mentors, people who have, I don't care what the business they're involved with is, I don't care if it's in your industry or if it's in some other industry. There are common characteristics that successful people share. And find as many of those people as you can and get to know them, because you're going to accomplish a few things if you do that. You're going to learn what types of traits lead to success in a business, but you're also going to make a friend. And there will come some point in time when I need help or my partner needs help or our business needs help, whether it's advice, how to think through a particularly difficult issue that we haven't faced before. And if we've developed those relationships with people who have faced this, regardless of what industry they're in, we can call on those folks to help give us advice if we end up needing it. And I've had the benefit of being mentored by, you know, very, very good lawyers, some of the best lawyers in Atlanta and in other cities in which I've practiced. And those relationships have been personally rewarding, professionally rewarding, but also give me a sounding board. You know, that's the closest, I guess, I have to the third-party person that I can look to.
Sure. This is DeKalb Business Today. Matt Holmes joined by James Cobb. But we also have Victoria Collier here. So you guys are both in law. You're in very different types of law, but they're going to be changing both of your industries over the next 5-10 years. And Victoria, I'll start with you. There's no doubt older people are going to continue to get older with advances in medicine and everything else. How does that change for you when the average, you know, life expectancy goes from 75 to 100 years down the road?
How it changes for us personally is that people will need to rely more on lawyers for guidance. Doing your own documents right off of the internet is not going to be sufficient. Not only is the law complicated, but families are complicated and just becoming more so. And we saw a great deal of that after 2008 when the financial crisis hit. But specifically how laws are changing, the veterans benefits piece for wartime veterans, where they offer income to help people pay for home health care, assisted living care, nursing home care. The VA has tried to impose a look back for transfers of assets, a penalty to people who are making gifts. And so it makes it harder to obtain these types of other resources and benefits. Medicaid already has that. And so as we see the changes coming down because of the financial crisis, both federally and statewide, is that I'm changing my practice. I personally have become licensed in insurance so that I can help advise clients as to bad products that maybe they've been offered by annuity salespeople. But I can also learn from the inside out as to what is good to help empower them and be able to, as I was saying before, pay privately instead of relying on the impoverishment programs. And so that's how we are helping our clients, is staying ahead of the curve, trying to figure out what is going to happen in the future and help them maintain their independence through it all.
James, talk to me about where your practice, where your industry is headed down the road.
There is great consolidation in the legal industry, and you're seeing fragmentation between, I'm focusing here on firms that practice in the corporate or business setting. Mm-hmm. I should set that out at the beginning. You have a series of very large law firms, and there's great consolidation among those firms because they're competing for a very small pool of clients who can afford to pay the hourly rates that these firms charge. I think you'll continue to see that. I also think you'll continue to see the growth of firms like mine. Atlanta historically has been a little behind the curve. I practiced in Boston. I'm from Atlanta, but practiced in Boston for a few years before coming back to Atlanta with my wife. And cities like Boston, cities like Washington, D.C., cities like New York, major legal markets, they have those very large firms, but they also have other smaller firms that are populated mostly by lawyers who used to practice at the big firms and that who do what I'm trying to do, provide that very high level of legal services you associate with the big firms, but do it in a lower overhead environment, and handle a lot of work that the larger firms can't handle because they might have a conflict of interest that precludes them from taking a case. Atlanta has had very few of those. You could probably count on two hands the number of firms that do that. And there's a big opportunity in Atlanta for a firm like that to prosper. That was one of the reasons that my partner and I started our firm. And it has so far worked out very well. I wouldn't be surprised if you continue to see firms that are of the profile my firm, Kaplan Cobb, is, continue to spring up around Atlanta. People take advantage of opportunities in the market. I'm not inviting your listeners to do that, but that's my prediction.
James, Victoria, you're both small business owners, entrepreneurs. With that come some lessons learned, maybe good, maybe bad. Victoria, what have you discovered in being your own boss and working for yourself?
I think, like James was saying, is that you have to surround yourself with advisors, whether that be formal advisors or informal mentors. And one of my greatest mentors, he is my greatest mentor, is a lawyer out of Kansas City that I rely on heavily for both professional and personal relations. Aside from that, we have to walk the talk. You know, I can't talk about planning for my clients unless we, which means myself and my entire team members, have done the planning themselves. Mm. We have to feel the pain that our clients go through, and we have to find our own solutions for that. And so I work well, or I try to, living what we discuss with our clients. And short of that, I would say that be involved in the community, because as a business owner and as a person, your community is everything to you. And that's where you thrive and that's where you dive. So, you know, that's what I would suggest.
James, what have you and your partner found?
everything Victoria said is exactly spot on. So the only thing I'll add is it's all about the people that you hire. I did not appreciate before starting my current firm how incredibly difficult the hiring process is, how difficult it is to find good people, people whom you can trust, who will be loyal, who will be there when you need them. It's the nature of business litigation where, you know, unfortunately, things happen at odd hours. Sometimes you'll get a motion for a temporary restraining order at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. And you know, well, I had planned to go to the lake this weekend, but now I'm going to be in the office. And you need people around you who understand the importance of serving clients. That's what we do. And who are willing to make those personal sacrifices. I never ask my employees to make a sacrifice unnecessarily. I don't want to make a sacrifice unnecessarily. I have 4 young kids and I like to spend time with them. But my clients are very important to me, and I want people who share that ideal. We have been very lucky at Kaplan Cobb to build a staff of associate attorneys and paralegals and administrative support that checks all those boxes. But I didn't appreciate how difficult it is to find those people. And when I look back on how we found our associate attorneys, for example, or how we found our paralegal, or how we found our administrative support, there are processes that I can't replicate in the future because right. There's a lot of serendipity and fortuity involved. We were lucky to get these people. They kind of fall into your lap. And once you find those people, do what you can to keep them. And it makes you a little nervous when you're thinking about expanding further. If we were to hire another attorney, can we find a person who's as good as the attorneys we've hired up to this point? I hope we can. And every time we've gone out to find the right person, we've been able to. But it's an extraordinarily difficult process. And as an employee, I did not appreciate. I spent years and years as an employed attorney with law firms, and didn't appreciate the perspective that the more senior lawyers in the firm have. I hope they had. I assume they had about the value of having a good employee, and running this business, growing this business, founding this business has been the clearest lesson that I've learned so far, in addition to all the important points that Victoria made.
I'll piggyback on that when you talk about hiring, because I graduated college in 2005, and that's about right when it started to be difficult to find a job. And so I had a lot of college classmates who said, I'm going to go to grad school. I'm going to go to law school. They didn't want to be lawyers. It was just the next thing to do because they couldn't find a job. Do you find there's a glut of people out there with law degrees who maybe aren't as invested in the law when you're looking at the hiring process, maybe makes it more difficult?
I would say for me, I've gone through a slew of lawyers, and I have decided to just hire really good non-lawyers. But what I have found, unfortunately, is that you have a person with a law degree that wants a high price tag because the JD after their name, but they don't have any substance behind it, and they don't have the passion for the type of law that we practice. And I'd much rather hire someone with passion than with credentials. Right. And so, but with anything, we have to find a system to find those right people. And just like running a business, everything should be, to the extent you can, for other business owners out there, find the processes and systems that you can put in place from the beginning. And we have now a very clarified system of hiring staff. I cannot say for me it is transferable to lawyers yet, but for staff, it's very important to have your process. And you, as everyone says, it's cliche, but it's so real, is hire slow, fire fast.
There you go. So. James, how about you?
That's great advice. We need to talk after the show so I can understand your process for hiring staff members. The hiring process, we have not seen a lot of unqualified applicants coming across. And if you look at the numbers, law school enrollment nationally, it's declined recently. It's starting to tick back up. A lot of that's because of what began in 2008 with the meltdown in the market. And professional services firms like law firms were some of the first victims of the, other than obviously the mortgage holders and the property owners who were decimated by it, but of the professional service providers, we don't make widgets. You know, we don't make a resource that you can buy and then continue to use. You hire a person, that's one of the first expense line items to go, unless it's absolutely necessary. So enrollment went down, starting pay at some of the biggest law firms went down. It's starting to creep back up. And what we're finding as we go out and look for new people is that they're out there. But this goes back to the point that I made earlier. It is so important to have surrounded yourself with people you trust. And in a time like this, when we're doing very targeted hiring, that's what my firm does, we rely on those people because their stamp of approval will carry a lot of weight. And when I said the process through which we hired our associate attorneys can't be replicated, it's largely because we had people we trust who recommended these folks. And we didn't have to go out and do a very wide search. If I was just coming out of law school today, I was one of those people who went to law school. I didn't go in 2005. I went before that. But when I went to law school, I didn't think I wanted to be a lawyer. A law degree to me was the one graduate degree that would give me entry or the potential for entry into public service, philanthropy, college administration. Before I was a lawyer, I worked for the University of Georgia and really liked working on college campuses, and having any graduate degree can be helpful when that's what you're trying to do. And then also potentially being a lawyer going into business. I got into law school and absolutely loved it. I loved everything about it. It was college was the best time of my life, but law school was a close second, and decided that I wanted to be a lawyer. If I was coming out, going through that process now, I'd be certainly more targeted as a new attorney, and I hope that the new attorneys coming out, they have been able to meet people and get to know older lawyers as they're in law school, so that they can be prepared for what the market's going to expect of them. But that's a long answer to your question. The short answer is we actually haven't seen unqualified people coming through. Everybody who showed interest in joining my firm has. I've been very pleasantly surprised by the quality of the candidates we've seen.
This is DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. Matt Holmes here with you. And wrapping up, just one last question, because for the both of you, James and Victoria, looking at your bios, it's very intimidating. James, you have 4 young children. Victoria, it might be even scarier. You have 5-year-old twins. Talk to me a little bit about work-life balance and how you make that work with kids.
For me, I knew that when I was starting my law practice in 2002 that it was my only focus, and I would work literally around the clock with 2 to 4 hours of sleep for the first 5 years. And it was building the practice so that I would not have to do that when I built my family. And so it took us 5 years to build our family. And so when we finally were blessed with our twins, I set a very strict schedule, and I also travel a lot because I co-own other businesses where I teach lawyers nationwide. Lawyers with Purpose is that business. And so when I'm in town, I make sure that I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I work until 6.
Wow.
I then get ready for the day. I wake my children up at 6:30. We have breakfast together every morning. I walk them to school every morning, which is a mile, to get them into good habits. And it's also bonding. And then I make sure that I am home at 5:45 every evening to have dinner with them. We then play for an hour and it's quality time. We don't ever turn the TV on. And then we do the bath time ritual, and then they're in bed by 7:45. Then I do my household item chores.
I was going to say, when are you in bed by?
I'm in bed by 9 to 9:30.
Wow.
After I walk my dog and do my household stuff that I need to do and bond with my spouse. And so so I get now 7 hours of sleep, and it is well worth it. And then on the weekends, I do not work. I am with my children and my family 100% on the weekends. If I have to work on the weekend, it's from 9 Sunday p.m. until about midnight. Mm-hmm. And that's how I structure my every day, other than when I'm out of town.
Okay, James, go ahead and top that.
I can tell you're in the military, Victoria. I cannot top that. My work-life balance, to the extent that there is one. And it was one of the reasons for starting this firm, frankly. My partner also has young kids. My oldest kid is 6, and my youngest kid is 13 months.
Wow.
So that's a big load and a big commitment. My wife is the single most amazing person I've ever met. She is the driving force of the family, and she stays home with the kids, which allows me to go out and try to build this business to build a future for my family. But an enormous benefit of starting the firm was that at my former firm, I had freedom. And I was, and I could structure my own life, but I still had 25 other lawyers, partners to whom I was accountable. Here, I have one partner, and I am accountable to him, and I'm committed to the business, and I've worked very hard to build the business, but I can do it on my own schedule. I also walk my kids to school in the morning, and I don't get home at 5:45, but I'm home by 6:30 or 7 every night so that I can at least catch the tail end of dinner with the kids and help them with bath and bedtime routines. And then if I have to do more work, I can do it at night. My wife is very understanding, and I have much more control over my life now that I have this small four-lawyer firm as opposed to having worked at a 50 to 100 lawyer firm. It's interesting. When I first started practicing law, we had Blackberries, mm-hmm. The old school Blackberries. And my first reaction to getting a Blackberry was, this is horrible because it will make it impossible for me to have any separation between my work life and my home life. But I quickly learned that it's exactly the opposite. It makes it, for me at least, easier to maintain both, because it's not so important to me that I have a strict divide between home life and work life, as long as I'm being responsible and fully involved in both. My work life is there to support my home life, and they're integrated in that way. So now I don't have a BlackBerry. Now I have iPhones and iPads and laptops, but it gives me freedom to work wherever I want to work. We have an office in Midtown Atlanta, and I'm in the office every day. But on a day like today, I live here in Decatur. I'll do this in the morning. I have a Decatur Rotary meeting this afternoon, so I'll be here in Decatur virtually all day until a meeting I have at 3:00 this afternoon when I'll go into Atlanta. That kind of freedom makes it much easier for me to maintain the work-life balance. And I also know that as I look forward, you have five-year-old kids, so you see this too, that things are going to change as they get older, and we'll have more after-school activities, and we'll have sporting events. And having the flexibility that owning Kaplan Cobb gives me will become even more valuable, because I can modify my schedule as necessary. If I decide to help coach a sport, or I'm so hopeful that one of my boys becomes a big golf fan. I want to play golf with him. Finding the time to do that will actually be easier, because I'll be able to, if I have to take 4 hours out of a day to go play a round of golf, I can find 4 hours at night after the kids are in bed. And nobody's going to look sideways at me if I do it that way. But it's balance is a very apt word for talking about the work-life balance, because it's like a teeter-totter. Mm-hmm. You're trying to keep both ends happy. But the technology that we have available to us today, I find at least, makes that much easier.
Well, guys, what a great conversation. We appreciate having you here. Again, our guest, Victoria Collier from the Elder and Disability Law Firm of Victoria Collier. You can check out her website at elderlawgeorgia.com. James Cobb, partner at Kaplan Cobb. Follow them on Twitter, at Kaplan Cobb. They're on Facebook, facebook.com/Kaplan Cobb. They're on LinkedIn. Or, again, if you're old-fashioned, you can check out their website, kaplancobb.com. And Hank Halter, the president and CEO of Delta Community Credit Union. They're on Twitter, at Delta Community. On Facebook, facebook.com/Delta Community. And deltacommunitycu.com is their website. Again, thank you guys for being here so much. We're going to be back here at noon with another edition of DeKalb Business Today. Until then, for executive producer Jason Becknell, I'm Matt Holmes. We'll see you next time here on DeKalb Business Radio.